You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today, I'm going to have about an hour show, but it's probably on a topic that's a very serious news events that really affect everybody on the planet. And that's the subject of many news stories this week and past weeks on genocide. Today, April 24th, is the day many people remember the Armenian genocide that happened 100 years ago. For those that are unfamiliar with it, roughly 1,500,000 people, maybe more, maybe less, no one really knows the exact number, were killed over several years. And it started in Turkey. And I say started because the Armenians were living in Turkey and had been living in Turkey for over 500 years. But because World War I had started, the Turkish government, and it's the government, decided to kill and confiscate the property of the Armenians. And they did it in a systematic way. It is considered by many to be the first genocide of the last century, or the 20th century. Not only Armenians were killed, so were Greeks. Over 1 million Greeks were also killed. Genocides have some common denominators. It's the government that targets a group of people for mass extinction. And there are different ways of targeting. One is religion. In this case, it was religion because the Ottoman Empire was Muslim, as were its leaders, and their target were Christian Armenians, as well as Christian or Greek Orthodox Greeks. And Catholics, as well as Protestants, were also killed. The way they did it, and it's a common to all genocides, is they typically kill the men and young, usually teenagers or above, kill them first. And that's what happened here. Men were killed, rounded up, and killed either by beheading or being shot in the head or knifed. And once the men were killed, women, children were rounded up. Many of the more attractive women were raped repeatedly, then killed. But the ones that were not executed immediately were deported. That didn't mean they didn't die, because they were deported usually into Syria and surrounding areas, into the desert, where they weren't provided with food or water, and they soon died of exposure and lack of food. And we'll see that over and over again, that what gets people's attention are the sheer numbers of it, the sheer horror of it, the brutality of it. But what tends to get lost is this is an action of a government. It's intentional. It's not accidental. It's not a crime of passion. And the scale can be hundreds of thousands to millions or more. And unfortunately, the Armenian genocide, and it's very much a genocide, was the first of many, many genocides in that century and continuing into this century. What concerns me is but more importantly, how can you prevent it? Usually the people that engage in this, that start the genocide, I think would be fair to describe as evil, and many would, but they're somewhat of fanatics. They believe very much in a religion, an ideology, and if you do not share that ideology or religion, or you're a member of a certain ethnic group, they typically will target non-members, non-believers, those that they perceive as their enemy. And they believe that if you don't agree with their ideology or religion or not of that ethnic group, you must die. They're they see people as animals that aren't of their group, and they believe they should be killed. So if you're going to prevent it, you want to make sure that the leaders of governments are persons of integrity, and that's important. Also important is, even if they are persons of integrity, they do not have what most people would consider fanatical views. And that can be difficult, because if you elect people that lack character, lack integrity, you're running a risk that if that person in power suddenly is not constrained by what most people would consider a conscience, they can pick one or more groups to go after. Now, there's a long history of this. I started with the Armenian genocide. You can go further back in history. The largest genocides were people of a ideology, typically communism, socialism. The communists under Lenin and then Stalin first were brutal in overthrowing the czar, the monarchy there, and the aristocracy. But they also attacked capitalists, businessmen, professionals. They also attacked and killed, executed people that, why not Bolsheviks, were socialists. In other words, they turned on their own, what many would consider their allies, and it was very much political in nature. So it's not always based on religion, nor is it based, like in Germany, on race with the National Socialist. It can, and many times is, simply the political opponents of the people in power. And that's where it gets probably the most dangerous, because who they consider their enemies changes literally from day to day. So some of the red flags are the people are fanatics. Don't elect fanatics, whether they're anti-Semites, racist, religious, or ethnic fanatics that try to demonize a group, no matter how they determine it. Whether it's their religion, their race, what ethnic group they belong to, or what their political philosophy is. But a big common denominator is government. Well, there's another term that you may or may not have heard of, and that's democide, and that is death by government. And that's a more encompassing term than just genocide. And there have been many, many democides. For example, in communist China, and again, these are communists. Millions were killed during the revolution, but millions more, their own people, were killed in the Great Leap Forward, where the government, again, imposed policies, agriculture policies, that were very much misguided, and anywhere from 35 million on up, the estimates, again, there's a wide range. No one knows the exact number. From 35 million to high as 70 million, died of starvation. That's the problem. Governments, and more pointedly, the leaders of those governments, do kill people. And they kill, typically, not only their own people, but their political enemies or their perceived enemies. They turn on their own. Many times it's out of paranoia, fear that people are plotting against them, and it might be justified or not, but it's the inability to tolerate dissent. And that is one of the dangers of having single-party rule, where dissent is crushed, and once that happens, at any time, a democide or genocide could happen. One of the common denominators of these groups is they disarm. One of the first things they do is disarm their opposition. So they have all the guns, all the knives, all the swords, all the means of killing their enemies. That's the one of the first things they do. Then they typically will kill the males, especially young males. And after they're done doing that, they kill the women. Sometimes they'll work them to death. Sometimes they'll kill them on the spot, shoot them in the head, line them up against the wall and execute them, or take them to a ditch, cut off their heads, bayonet them, or shoot them. The end result's the same. You have millions of dead people. Some it's fast, some it's slow, but inevitably the victims of these atrocities are dead. Today, we have genocide in the world. I think it's increasing. And it's in several places, and it's largely religious-based. You see it in the news stories that we have had in the last several weeks. were members of the Islamic State, for example, in Libya, have executed Christians, and that's why they were executing them. Oh, yeah, they might give you an opportunity to convert to their religion, but if you don't, they kill you. They might cut off your head, they might shoot you, they might drown you, or they might burn you. You're still dead. And because you have no means to resist, there's little you can do. Because if you do resist, you're convinced that they will kill you. What's scary to me and others is the world is doing very little to stop these fanatics, because the executions of Christians and other people of other religions, for example, the Islamic State are Sunnis. Many of them are Wahhabis, Salafists. And if you don't believe in their version of Islam, they will kill you. They will also kill Sunnis. It's not strictly Islam against Islam, but it is very much religious sect against religious sect. And periodically through history, you get periods of genocide. Now, some of you will say the Islamic State is not a government. I understand, maybe I understand where you're coming from, but that misses the point. If they control large geographical areas, in other words, they're the only force in those areas, they are the government, whether you want to recognize that fact or not. Now, what typically happens is what's called ethnic cleansing, where the objective is to try to get people to flee their homes and immigrate someplace else. And they do this through terror. For example, publishing videos on YouTube that people that have internet access can see, as well as sending you letters or warnings, either get out or we'll kill you. You see, while they do want to kill you, they give you a chance to flee. And then they take over the homes and the possessions that are left behind. That's a common denominator, whether it's the Islamic State doing it in Iraq and Syria or the Nazis doing it in Germany. For many years, if you could, you could get out of Germany. They were encouraging people to leave. But if you didn't, you were sent to the concentration camp. Many were executed once they arrived. Many were simply worked to death. And that's the same that happened in the Soviet Union. Under Stalin, a whole nation was starved. The kulaks. The kulaks were peasants. They were farmers. But they kept demanding more and more food and ultimately killed or deported Ukrainians, farmers, to other areas in the Soviet Union. So there are differences between the genocides, but you always have the people doing the killing and their victims. The problem is you have to resist as best you can. For many people, the best thing to do is to simply flee. And that's hard to do, especially if your family and your friends have lived in a country for hundreds of years. And usually if you flee, you're lucky you can leave with the clothes on your back. It's not easy to flee. But what would possess someone to do that? It's terror, folks. It's terror. Now, the reason I'm focusing in on this, it has been clear to me for months that the Islamic State is trying to provoke the United States into re-engaging in Iraq. And the reason is fairly clear. It's not hard to understand. They would like to kill American soldiers. They want a rematch. And it's very tempting to many Americans to give them that rematch. In other words, to go back and intervene again in Iraq. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I'm against that. I'm not for government intervention abroad, because it inevitably leads to more and more government intervention, and you end up being committed there for not years, decades. And the only way you win is by totally defeating the enemy. And the problem with being policemen of the world and building democracies is, with few exceptions, or generals or soldiers, they don't know the language, they don't know the culture, they don't know the religion or history of the country. And invariably, why they might be welcome as liberators when they come in, within a few short months or few short years, they're considered occupiers. And then the insurgents or guerrilla warfare begins, and that we have another cycle of killing. That's what the Islamic State is trying to do. They're trying to deliberately provoke us into a response. So far, the response of the United States has been at best limited, primarily airstrikes. But our military generals know that you'll never defeat the Islamic State with airstrikes alone. If you want to defeat the Islamic State, you're going to need to go in with ground troops. And that means, again, a commitment of American soldiers, or it could. That's one option. I think that would be a mistake. That is playing the game of these fanatics, and they are fanatics. Now, what's the problem? Let's take the Islamic State and Iraq and Iran for a minute. We have some fundamental differences here. First, you have religious differences amongst the Muslims. The majority of Muslims are Sunni. A minority are Shia. And the Iraqis and the Syrians are Arabs. The Iranians are Persians or Iranians. And it's the Iranians that are majority is Shia. And the majority of the people of Iraq who are Arabs are also Shia. So when we got engaged on the first time, there's been several wars already where U.S. troops have been to Iraq, primarily to overthrow Saddam Hussein. But you shouldn't commit troops unless you're totally committed to war and have the backing of the American people. And that's rather critical, and you get that backing by declaring war. Now, what does this have to do with genocide and democide? It's clear that the United States, as well as other nations, including the United Nations, would be justified in intervening in Iraq and in Libya and other nations because the acts of the Islamic State do meet the definition of genocide, or at least several of the criteria. They are systematically killing Christians as well as Muslims that don't share their sectarian views. And even those that do, if they don't go along with them, they kill them. They also kill Iraqi government and policemen if they capture them. You see, they don't take prisoners, or they don't take prisoners for very long. Once they have them in control, they will kill them. That's what they want to do, because they know to the extent that they continue doing it, it terrorizes the people that are in the immediate vicinity. Now, I'm bringing this up for this reason. It's very clear to me that you have on both sides, whether it's the Islamic State or the Iranian Shia side in Iraq, there is obviously a dislike, if not hatred, of Americans, and as well as Christians and Europeans that are Christians, not to mention Jews. And in the United States, unfortunately, is increasingly being perceived as weak. Now, I know on the news, the ships that Iran was sending to provide military supplies and munitions to Yemen for people that are Shias there was turned back. Now, our fleet, our aircraft carrier group, obviously was in position that if they didn't turn back, we could have hostilities. Now, that's a first step, a show of force, but that really doesn't stop genocide. We've been at war with Iran for over 35 years. It's just been undeclared, and proxies have been used. Now, I'm leading up to something. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and it's become very clear in terms of what's discussed, call-ins, as well as if you go to the newscast. The American people are more and more perceiving that the Islamic State is killing Christians. In other words, we have a genocide of Christians. Oh, they're not American Christians or European Christians, although a few are. They're primarily Egyptian Christians or Ethiopian Christians. Those are the people in the iron suits that are being beheaded, drowned, or shot. Who knows why they select one means of execution than another? And again, part of what's going on is to terrorize people, but also to provoke people. And they do that by making sure that their actions are filmed, in other words, videos, and then publishing those videos to the entire world to view on YouTube, and in turn covered by the various news networks. Now, I'm going over this for a reason. We have genocide today. You're living in a world where there are several genocides. And it's nothing new. but it's fundamentally political. It's about power, and it's about defeating your perceived enemies. For example, in the Middle East, Iran wants to be the dominant regional power in the Middle East. That's why they're trying to get a nuclear weapon. And given the way and the fact that the United States negotiated with them, that in itself is perceived as weakness. You do not deal with fanatics from a position of weakness or perceived weakness. Because if you do, that encourages further acts of terrorism and further demands. The Iranian leadership wants immediate lifting of sanctions and have excluded army or military bases from inspections. That is far, far, far from the initial place that the Obama administration started from. We don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. Well, if the United Nations, the International Atomic Energy Commission, are not able to do inspections, what's the point, especially on military bases? And if you lift the sanctions immediately, which shouldn't be done at all, you're giving them more economic resources to not only increase their military spending, but also their spending in developing faster and producing faster nuclear weapon. You see, you shouldn't be appeasing or cooperating with those that want to, if they had the power, kill you. Weakness is not what you want to show to fanatics. You want to show you have the ability to destroy them, and if they don't cease and desist doing what they're doing, they face execution or extinction. So what ultimately should be done in the Middle East? And it's a very difficult problem. It is fundamentally a religious civil war, between Sunni and Shia, between Arabs and Persians or Iranians. And both sides have their allies. Many Americans want to do something about it. We need to stop this. That is the natural reaction. But should we intervene? I always say, if you want to go to war, follow the Constitution. Have a complete discussion, not only in Congress, but with the American people as to why. In other words, if you're going to go to war, make sure the American people know why, that it truly is in the national interest, and make it clear that why we might be able to win the war fairly quickly, we're making a long-range commitment of decades of staying in the country we defeat. And that's what we would be doing. You don't get in and get out. That's the conventional wisdom today. If we're going to go to war, we go in there, we win, and then we pull out. Doesn't work out too well. Because if that is your so-called great strategic strategy or plan, you're deluding yourself. So we need to remember that many people, millions of people, estimate range over 200 to 300 million people, more people have died because of genocide and democide, in other words, government killing people, than in all the wars that have been fought over that period. But if you truly want to stop genocide, it means war. You can't talk to these people. You shouldn't cooperate with these people. That's the opposite of what you should be doing. In other words, force, not talk, is the answer. And the last thing you should do is do this as a knee-jerk reaction. It needs to be well thought out. And there's very little attempt by the governments, so-called civilized governments, in Western Europe, Japan, the United States, to get involved. And I am of that persuasion. Does that mean we do nothing? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because like I said, what is the first thing these fanatics do? They disarm their opposition. They disarm them. Now, once they have you disarmed, they have you. You don't surrender. Easy to say. But if the people in these lands had weapons to defend themselves, as well as ammunition, and knew how to use them, the fanatics would be less inclined to go after these people. They go after the defenseless, small minorities. They also go after anyone that disagrees with them. Genocide is fundamentally a political act. It's no accident that some of the worst genocides were committed by what I would call a communist, but more precisely, Leninists, Stalinists. And they killed not only their perceived opponents, but also socialists, because they were fundamentally, all they were interested in was power, power. And that's what we have in the Middle East today. It's about power. It's dueling caliphates, where one side is Sunni and the other side is Shia. One side is Arab, the other side is Persian. And the victims of this genocide are predominantly people of the Muslim faith. Yes, Christians, Jews, and other minorities are being killed, but the overwhelming majority of people that are being killed are people of the same faith, but a different sect. And that's hard to understand. But not that hard, because in Western Europe, if you go back in our history, you had Catholics killing Protestants and Protestants killing Catholics. Both were Christians. So why the victims tend to be people of a different religion or ethnic group or economic class or different political ideology, they typically are a minority. In other words, one side has the numbers, and they use these victims first to gain power and then to keep power and also to steal the property and belongings of those that flee. We need leadership in the world to stop this outbreak of genocide in the Middle East. It needs to be addressed. It's not an easy problem, and it's not for one country to solve. And I think the worst thing that could happen is the United States go back in. Yes, we're a superpower. Yes, we have military forces. And yes, we should be opposed to genocide. But do you want your son and daughter to act as umpire referee in a civil war? I don't, and I think the majority of American people agree with that position. What we can do is provide arms, training, intelligence. Groups that are not engaged in genocide can defend their own territory, their own people. In other words, fight their own battles. It's not going to be easy. It's complicated because you have a long history of this in the Middle East and in the Ottoman Empire. What we need to focus in on, especially today, are the millions of victims. And the best way to remember them is to stop genocides in our midst. And we have them today. Who, what nation is defending Christians? Because Christians right now are the minority in the Middle East. It's no longer the Jews, because most of the Jews have been killed or have fled where they used to live for hundreds of years. So it's Christians that are the martyrs or the victims of these genocides. So it's up to the Christian nations to decide what is the best strategy to stop this. It needs to be stopped. Talk is simply not going to work. Talk will not work. Fanatics only understand force, and the only way you stop a fanatic is to kill a fanatic. And keep in mind, a lot of people think you can do this by air power. I don't know if you picked up on this. I have. What the Islamic State is doing is using tunnels, and it's difficult to spot someone that's deep underground in a tunnel. Tunnels are used, for example, in attacking Israel by Hamas and Hezbollah, and to find positions to launch rockets from, and they're hard to spot. They're there, and that's what the Islamic State is doing. It's just like the communists did in Vietnam. They use tunnels because they are limited to how they can respond to our Air Force attacking them. So you'll go underground, and that's what they're doing. They know if they remember, most of this territory is desert. And once they reveal themselves out in the open in the desert, they're sitting ducks. And they know that. They know that. That's why they have systems of tunnels in the territories that they now control. What I'm trying to emphasize is this is not going to be easy. This is a challenge of the First Order. But I'm not seeing any leadership at all that I'm aware of out of this president. And I don't think we'll see it, for example, if Hillary Clinton should be elected. It would be wrong, I think, to re-engage. And what I mean by that, put 150,000, 250,000 combat troops back into Iraq and Syria. What we need is a coalition of forces, predominantly Muslim, to stop this religious war amongst Muslims. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening. Yes, Saudi Arabia is attacking the Shiites in Yemen, but Al-Qaeda who's Sunni, wants to overthrow the Saudi regime. Turkey won't get involved, won't shut down or control their border. They're Sunni. They don't see the Islamic State as a threat. And remember, Turkey is the descendants of that Ottoman Empire that killed over 1.5 million or higher Christian Armenians 100 years ago. They killed them by executing them. They killed them by marching them. They killed them by drowning them, throwing them in the oceans off the ships, and they killed them by starvation. It was planned, organized by the government, and they succeeded. And why at the time people were aware of it, it was in our newspapers. Did it prevent any future genocides or democides? The answer is it did not. So the biggest threat today to human life are other humans that organize as governments and use their political power to target usually minorities, to kill and steal from them, take away their lives, encourage them to flee. And that's what it's about. It's about power. And it's about giving power to people that lack character, lack integrity, and lack a conscience. So it needs to be stopped. It should be stopped. But until several of the world leaders step forward and confront this situation and come up with a plan or strategy to deal with it, the killing will go on. The genocides will go on. It is best by far to stop it when it starts. But unfortunately, neither the United Nations or other world powers, mainly us, have been able to do that because it's not in our national interest. And usually it's not in our national interest. It is in the interest of humanity, though, of every human on the planet. Unfortunately, the history of man is the history of war, it's the history of genocides, and it's the history of democides. So you need to be very, very careful who you put into power, because one day you might wake up and you may be the target of that genocide. So you need to speak up. You need to let your representatives and senators know that the genocide of Christians today need to be stopped. But also, equally important, the genocide of Muslims, whether they be Sunni or Shia, also needs to be stopped. Because by far the victims of this genocide are not Christians. They're not Jews. They're Muslims. We have today a Muslim genocide because of two dueling caliphates. And I think they're out of control. And the last thing, the absolutely last thing that should happen is one side, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran, obtain a nuclear weapon. I'm of the opinion they already have it. And what they're trying to do is get more. And we have a president that unfortunately is appeasing, cooperating with these religious fanatics instead of trying to change that regime. Because the victims here are the Iranian people, are the Iraqi people. Most, not all, but most of the victims are Muslims. And today, many in the world are now perceiving Muslims as the threat. Remember, there are approximately 1.6 billion Muslims. And they're not all killing each other. Most of the killing is, fortunately, in the Middle East and North Africa. But it's too much. The stability of that region is no longer. It has always been fragile. So we should pray for those that were the victims, but we should also be very careful who we elect to be our leaders and to make sure that they protect the interest, first and foremost, of the American people. Because if we don't look out for the American people, who will? So we have an election coming up in 2016, but we have an election every 2 years. We need to focus on the big picture. And I think we have the eye very much off the ball. And the problem is identity politics works. And if that's the way you choose your leader, you get who you voted for. And you have them right now in Barack Obama. A big disappointment to many. Didn't surprise me. I checked him out. I was concerned many years ago. And he's actually worse than my wildest imagination. And no one is really stopping him in Congress. And you see it in his flagrant violation of immigration laws, his refusal to enforce immigration laws. In other words, we have a tyrant in the making. Many would say he's already a tyrant. He's just acting out. What does tyranny look like? Flagrant disregard of the laws of the land. And that's what he's doing in the immigration area and others. But that's the one that gets the news. And I bring it up for an important reason. We must control our borders. You've heard news reports that the Islamic State, or people that agree with the Islamic State, have actually a training post in Mexico where they've stockpiled ammunition and we're training. Ladies and gentlemen, the problem today is in the Middle East, but tomorrow it might be in your community. So we need creative leadership, and we need a coalition to stop today's genocides, today's democides. Otherwise, it could come to your country. With that, I need to close out the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.